SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Enough! Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good President's Day. Race fans, Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964, listening to Sirius XM online, a viable option, and at our website, stevepick.com. And hard not to kind of open the festivities for the week with the concerns and well wishes for everybody in the path of what is a, they keep saying unprecedented, but it's not unprecedented. And it is going to be seemingly a disaster, a mess. Lots of cancellations, and there's still a lot of pending decisions for racing in particular. Watching at Oaklawn, where not only are they going to get ice and snow, they're already getting it. The temperatures are not going to, you know, moderate enough to, you know, to get rid of it. And so there's real concern. There's a meeting this morning. I talked to Hammer yesterday late afternoon in anticipation of getting a handle on this. And they already have swapped the Saturday and Sunday cards. You know, they had agglomerated the stakes from this weekend, the Bayakoa, the Razorback, and the Southwest scheduled for today, and they were going to run them Saturday. Now they're going to try to run them on Sunday, but this is problematic out there for them, and we'll just keep an eye on it. And as I sent out last night, that with that link to an amazing story, I just was curious myself about, you know, how much of this kind of severe winter weather has hit, you know, the region historically. And there's been, you know, there's been snow. I remember going to Dallas for an Eagles game, and they had gotten ice and snow on, I think it was a Saturday game, and on Friday they got ice and snow, and the town was paralyzed. I mean, it was a mess. People, you know, cars ditched everywhere for for a quarter of an inch of ice and snow, because everybody's got bald tires. Nobody worries about so, you know, there is history of weather. But I came across, and we're going to talk to Nick Tamaro. We'll get a Houston report. And I had seen, in fact, that Houston specifically was getting, was, you know, in the, going to be in the path of plenty of snow. And so I don't even know how I looked it up, but I found a story, and it's on my Twitter line, found a story from Valentine's Day, February 14th and 15th, 1895. I had never heard of this. A winter storm that stretched from Mexico to Florida, 1895, and part of a low light of a miserable winter, apparently, throughout the region. It fascinating. It was like basically like a blog entry, spacecityweather.com or something. And the guy wrote a... It's an extensive piece with tremendous reference. If you like historic kinds of things, I pull it up and you'll really be interested. And you know, devastation to the citrus crop and vegetable crops in Florida. It was funny. The piece about Florida talks about the pineapple crop as well. You don't really think of Florida. We actually got a small box of produce of tangerines, oranges, and grapefruits And they were very close to frozen. I think the tangerines are cocked. But anyway, Delta is canceled. No racing, no training today, tomorrow. Laurel, of course, ended up canceling the Saturday card and transferring the whole thing to next Saturday, the Winter Sprint Fest. And they said basically as is. So they're not redrawing the card. They're just transferring the whole card to next Saturday. And Sam Houston had they got in the Saturday card, but then yesterday they closed OTB and the simulcast a little early. And so I'm sure I haven't seen anything yet today. There's actually lots of nice news about Sam Houston, if you didn't see, with the outstanding handle numbers. They're giving the purses an increase. We'll probably get to Frank Hopf. Nick Damaro, I said, will join us, but Nick's on the more on the racing side for when it comes to SHRP. Let's get to the racing side after this, weather on the zeros or whatever, action news, action news, WBYK. The racing side of things on Saturday, and thanks to Tina, and hope everybody had a great Valentine's Day. It's funny, I was ready to make the big Valentine's dinner last night, and then we were going to have, I made crab cakes. She wanted crab cakes again. The crab cakes were such a hit last Sunday. She wanted them again as her Valentine's dinner. But then she was going to make a mac and cheese, her specialty. And so she made the mac and cheese and said, let's save the crab cakes for today. She's on vacation all week. I'll be under the gun all week long. But we went to Rochester for the baby, and the baby's just so much fun. Baby's unbelievable. And we got to babysit the baby because Zach and Andrea had a wedding to go to, kind of a last minute. They didn't know if they were going to be able to go to this wedding in Rochester, based on, guest limits. But they managed to get in under the 50 head count. So we babysat, which was a riot. And, just playing. I mean, she was in a great playful mood, and we got to give her a bath. That was fun. And baby bath time and, lots of splashing. That was our weekend. But Tina was very busy with baby Lennon, so I got to watch everything and bet, and everything was going swimmingly, certainly at Fairgrounds, until Chris Block, a captivating moon, I'm sure, throwing a wrench in a lot of multi-race plans. We'll talk to Chris Block, too, because Block went into the weekend having lost Charlie's Penny for the Rachel Alexandra. But then things actually, ended up okay. So we'll get an update on Charlie's Penny, who's out for just a little bit and is going to obviously miss the Oaks run-up, which is too bad. But still came away from the Risen Star card with a big stake win. Captivating Moon wins the Fairgrounds with Marcelino Pedroza. And, it went back afterward. The Thoroughgraph, Captivating Moon. I'll tell you one thing. When you have horses like this that are cross-entered, that was a mitigating circumstance, about having, these kinds of, kind of looking in different, in different spots. And so I don't know, I guess I glossed over to some degree, that was tough. Because he had been cross-entered in the Colonel Power, and I don't know why mentally, you don't appreciate, the horse. I guess you sort of compartmentalize a cross entry and think, oh, I'll look at him when we know what race he's in. So that was brutal because it obviously made all the late multis just sing. The the sequence and really the whole card, when you start folding in the maidens as well, and we're going to talk to Al Stahl. There were some really fun harmonies, frankly, on that card. And one of them, of course, was Little Al winning the Big Al Memorial with Dalika. And in addition, though, Stahl sent out the opener, the Spitestown Philly Caribbean Caper, who was really good. Sharp debut, 87 buyer for her. And that really got the day, you know, kind of rolling. There was also what the Louisiana Bread Allowance that Sam Breaux won with Dixie Lady, and then from there it was all maiden specials and all stakes, and there were a lot of good performances and really good races. The highlight, we're going to talk to Steve Asmussen. Not that Mandaloon's win wasn't impressive, because it was, the horses that came back out of the LeCompte, they just basically shuffled the deck essentially, but to me, the performance, there were a couple of big performances that stood out. Clairiere and Joe Talamo's ride in that Rachel Alexandra was unbelievable. Watch it again. And I know some people are for some reason, just all over Florent Giroux. I don't know what else Giroux was supposed to do exactly, or what people are dissatisfied with. I guess he didn't get to work on him. That's the complaint, that he didn't get on her, what's her name, on the outside. Oh, my God. The Cox filly. What the hell's wrong with me? But I didn't really see it that way, and it seemed to me that the ride that Joe Talamo put in on Clairiere, because this was no sequence, this was no race day at Fairgrounds to be coming from, way out of it. She was the best closer of the day by far. And in fact, Marcus, it wouldn't hurt to get Marcus in for some recapping. I don't have room today. We got a full dance card, but Marcus made the point, and this involves actually the Risen Star, too, with Senior Buscador, who was just way too far back to make an impact. And Fairgrounds is not, as Martin, as Marcus wrote, after the card, deep closers are you can't launch your bid like you might at other venues. And so Quinones was way too late with Senior Buscador. And Clairiere, Joe Talamo certainly knows his way around Fairgrounds. And Talamo inches up, and is when suddenly on the backstretch, you realize she's, Clairiere is, right there waiting for her opening. She had to negotiate her way around that the Amos filly that was stopping the early leader. Off we go. So he comes off the rail, gets, and then goes right back down inside and pursues, and then kicks out and runs down Travel Column, who had, I suppose if there, I don't know, it didn't seem to me that Giroux was all that close to the pace setter. And it's not like this race went in some crazy breakneck speed. 23-3, 47-4, 114-1. So I don't know. I thought Travel Column got beat on the square. And Clairiere, 85 buyer for the Curlin Philly out of Cavorting for Stone Street, Barbara Banking and Company, Steve Asmussen. And I'm looking forward. I got a lot to catch up on with Steve Asmussen, not just some recent stake wins, but also a hatful of maidens. We want to see some next steps, particularly for the Leblancs. But this, I thought, was a brilliant ride by Talamo, and he obviously knew what he had. We'll talk to Brendan Walsh. I'll give this a quick rundown because Michelle Lovell is going to join us fairly early here, actually right away. And in fact, Case, you could reach for Michelle, and we're going to talk to her about Just Might's win, and I mean powerful performance in the Colonel Power on the main track, a 101 buyer. And Michelle's going to have to really weigh her options with the Just Might. After he defends his Colonel Power, he's now won a Colonel Power on the grass and a Colonel Power off the turf. And the argument could be made that, you know, go on with it sprinting. Question is, you know, distance for him if he can sprint 6 furlongs. So we'll see what Michelle's thoughts are. I'll give you the rundown because it's a Fairgrounds Festival here, and they race today for the holiday, and then there's a holiday tomorrow, one of our favorites around the show, and Casey will be dusting off Professor Longhair and Antoine Fats Domino and so much more. Fat Tuesday tomorrow, and the Mardi Gras steak is really good, and it's a strong card. Today's kind of a mundane set of races, but tomorrow, tomorrow's card is really good. The pick five, 3-year-old fillies sprinting allowance, 3-year-old fillies on the turf. I don't know if turf is going to hold up, depending on how much weather comes through NOLA, but big group in there. And then a filly and mare allowance sprint. You got the Mardi Gras, which is scheduled for the turf sprinting, and then a 3-year-old boys maiden special with a bunch of firsters and probably a heavy, I won't say heavy favorite. You have two favorites that are going to draw a lot of attention that have already raced. Warrant for Brad Gox and Amos with Wild for Wycliffe have both run well coming back looking for diplomas. So tomorrow's card, what's fascinating is you're going to hear from 4 trainers today that if things work out weather-wise and main track-wise or turf-wise, hold on, for God's sakes, I'll tell you. Thanks, Case. I didn't know we weren't. All right, let me give you this. The 4 of today's visitors, Brendan Walsh, Chris Block, Michelle Lovell, and Al Stahl, all have horses in tomorrow's Mardi Gras. Into Mystic going to be the favorite, of course, for Walsh, but winning envelope for Block. Michelle's got Change of Control, and Al's got In Good Spirits. It's pretty crazy. I said to myself, all right, rather than spread things out, I think we're going to get everybody on as quickly as possible today so we can look ahead to tomorrow's card. And frankly, Asmussen and Stahl and Block and Moore have got other runners lined up in on that card. So Michelle Lovell's going to join us first. Then Mig, we'll get to Rich Migliori after Michelle. And, of course, Rich is going to be on TV today with the America's Day at the Races. We'll get his take on the weekend. And Aqueduct, another state bred stake today, the Holly Hughes. Yesterday, if you didn't see it, quite a performance, actually, by Nikki the Vest for Jonathan Thomas and Bob LaPenta. The Run Happy. I think that's the first stake winner for Run Happy, if I'm not mistaken. In fact, Run Happy had one other, that Run Classic from the weekend for Brett Calhoun, won one of the maidens Saturday at Fairgrounds. But today it's the Holly Hughes, yesterday the Gander, and all right, so we'll talk to Mick. Steve Asmussen, Brendan Walsh, Chris Block, Nick will be in as promised. Nick with a Monday stake and the holiday visit, as he often does. And then little Al Stahl. So a full dance card as promised this morning. And up first will be Michelle. And you know what? I just, Safi Joseph, I just heard from Safi Joseph. And I think we're going to have to table him till tomorrow. So I'll apologize to Safi. Case, you got Michelle? I guess that's an that's a yes, you do. All right. Yeah, the concerns, of course, about Saturday at Fairgrounds, a lot of it was, you know, how much rain the course took Thursday and Friday. And I was checking early in the morning with everybody, and word came that, you know, one of the maiden races was going to come off, and the Colonel Power was going to come off. And it pretty much stayed intact, though, and that included Michelle Lovell with her terrific Just Might, who won this a year ago. And she told me, I'm staying in. We're going to run on the dirt, and it pays off quite nicely. In fact, the last time he was rained off, that came last year, ahead of the Colonel Power, and he ends up running a career best figure. He just drowned this field. Michelle Lovell joins us. Congratulations.
Thank you so much, Steve.
This is a nice story, and he's now, you know, a five-year-old, Justin Philip, and we've talked about him several times. Go through Saturday's scenario.
Well, you know, I kind of secretly hoped it would come off the turf, and but I didn't think we'd lose. But what we did, the Mark Cassie horse, which I thought was a really good horse in the race, but I knew we still had some good horses to beat, even if it came off. And man, he did it. He showed that he could run and on the dirt really well, and it was truly exciting to see him do it like he did.
You know, the fact that he got to the lead wasn't, you know, much of a surprise, but, you know, those that you thought might be able to stay with him or press, that included Bango, you know, just who was inside, and nobody, you could tell right away, that everybody was being asked. And CJ Hernandez was just riding him along. I mean, he was dialed in.
Yeah, you know, in the paddock, I really struggled with it because of the fact that Bango was in there and a good dirt horse. And barring his last race prior, it was in really good form and had quite a bit of speed. And I usually when our horse, he usually breaks really well and puts himself there on a long lane and never been asked away, and he can kind of rate, and Colby usually takes him away from a horse if they're in front of him going down the backside and then just rides his race. And I thought, gosh, if we just, you know, Brendan's horse had some really good tracking speed as well. Obviously he didn't the other day because he didn't make the break as well, and so he was last and made a really good rally from behind to be second. So, but him, you know, being able to track us close and Bango to our inside, I thought, you know, I don't really want to be pressed in between them. So I just told Colby, you know, I hate to tell you how to ride a horse, you know how to ride. But I think with the way the track was playing earlier in the day, maybe we just should, you know, if you break really well, just, you know, go ahead and ask him a little bit and, you know, make the lead if you can. And if not, just ride him like you always do. And he did. He asked him for a couple of strides, and then he rode him like he always did, and the horse just really stretched, and he looked great. And he's learned, you know, this past year to really kind of fight it out and not hang as much as he was. So I don't know. It was pretty impressive to watch. Yeah,
I agreed, and you know it. I suppose there's two questions to ask out of this, and you talk about him, you know, learning. It's been evident with him that, and now I'm not looking at his maiden, at his original maiden win on the page, but his last three wins have been wire to wire, and
yeah.
That you know that kind of right,
yeah.
So you do wonder, is he better off getting in front And now, after a career best triple digit fig, you got to say, you know, can he make it six furlongs? Can he go on with, you know, main track sprinting?
Yeah, everybody's, you know, asked me about that after that performance. And, you know, he worked really well. Of course, we had him, you know, training him towards the Breeders' Cup race. I thought he had a really good chance in that. And the only time he ever missed a break was that day, unfortunately, and he didn't enjoy getting bumped around behind. And so it wasn't a great day, but we had a great time regardless. But, you know, he has shown the liking for the lead, and he's done it really on his own until the other day, just when Colby kind of pressed him away a little bit and, you know, made the lead. But I always struggle with him making the distance, going six furlongs if he could do it, you know. But I just think he's matured so much now that he may be able to stretch it out farther. I mean, he looked great on the end of that race the other day. And Colby, I don't think he ever really hit him. I think he went back to hit him, and he looked back, and he was winning. And he's such a good little rider, you know. He doesn't go hitting a horse that's winning, you know. And that was awesome. He just threw a couple crosses, and then he kind of geared him down, which we just missed the track record, which was pretty cool too, you know. But putting him in a straight up dirt stakes race against some really good dirt horses, I mean, we're going to get a bigger field, some really fast horses in there, and I don't, you know, I guess we'll find out. It's nice when we're in a turf race, and if it scratches off, you know, we get a little bit of a shorter field. So I don't know. I guess we'll have to answer that question if it comes to it. You know, we do have another turf race, you know, we're pointing them at, you know, at Keeneland. We ran in it last year and didn't have a great trip. So, you know, I kind of think I'll just maybe aim him for those 5.5 turf since he is really good at it. But I don't know. That's a big question, you know, to run against some really good sprinters on the dirt.
Well, and at the very least, you know, you already knew that he could succeed in an off the turf scenario. So if you keep up, you know, that kind of targets, things like, you know, you mentioned going to the Shakertown, for instance, you know, the Woodford, and last year you third, of course, in the turf sprint at Churchill. And, you know, there's no shortage of those kinds of opportunities. And if they come off, you're live.
Yeah. Yeah, it's great to have an abundance of turf horses in my barn. That's mainly what I get to train. And it's so wonderful to have a horse that can do both, you know. It really is. And, you know, with him being able to run as well as he does on the dirt, at least we're not stuck if there are no turf races available for him. So that's really nice. That's really nice to have in our back pocket.
Well, you mentioned the turf horses. We'll talk in a second about tomorrow's stake. And it's very funny, Michelle. I've got you, Chris Block, Little Al, and Brendan Walsh all on today, and Steve Asmussen.
Wow.
Asmussen's the only one that doesn't have a horse in the Mardi Gras. The other four, Al and you and Chris and Brendan, all have runners. So you're all going to come together tomorrow. In fact, let's talk about that, and then I'll fill in a couple of blanks with some other recent runners. But Change of Control comes back, and you try to sweep the weekend turf sprint opportunities here with the filly.
Yeah, you know, it's raining currently.
Yeah.
And it looks like it's going to snow around noon today. So, depending on how much rain we get, you know, hopefully we'd be on the turf tomorrow. If not, I'm not sure we'll actually run her, because she just ran and at Houston against the boys. So she ran a really nice race that day, got a little bit of trouble. Nobody's fault, ran a really nice third. And so we're not pressed to run her if it comes off. She can run on the dirt, but not at that level as well. So, but if we don't get a huge downpour, I mean, maybe it will be on the turf. That would be awesome. Saying that, she doesn't truly seem to love a turf with any cut in it. You know, she kind of likes it a little firmer. So I don't know. We'll see. But I'm excited about running her. She's doing super. She came out of that race at Houston really awesome mentally and physically. So, yeah, I expect her to run really well tomorrow if we get to.
Nice. Well, we'll get we'll survey everybody that that's in almost everybody that's involved in this group. I suppose if it we're just looking to see if it is going to come off. Well, Todd Fincher's got that Into Mischief mare. She's my gem. She'll certainly. Boy, you know what? If not, I'm just realizing if Senior Buscador could have pulled off the win in the Risen Star, there'd be another trainer that would be involved in this race. Unbelievable. And I'm not calling Cassie,
it was a great
even though
day of
it was tremendous. I enjoyed that so much. You know, start to finish. I mean, with the maiden races were engaging, and it was a terrific 12 races, a very pleasant afternoon, and usually one where we enjoy. In fact, I put up that picture on Friday. I put up that picture from, I guess it was probably three or four years ago. I don't remember. Risen Star Day. On Friday, we should mention, you sent out Ballin' on a Budget, a Louisiana bred that almost... Mm-hmm. That knocking on the door, this colt.
He really is. Yeah, I wasn't sure that he would be able to run as well as he did off the turf, because I think he really did. He really needed to go long, and the turf he seemed to really like. But man, he did. He ran a really nice race. Still a bit green. He's still very immature, but he's coming along really well, and he. He did. He ran as hard as he could. And then we just, you know, we had a horse that came to our outside, which we actually took out a little bit further, so he covered even more ground, and then he rolled by us. So that was a really nice horse that beat us. But, yeah, no shame in that. He's hopefully he'll get there next time.
He's a Sky Kingdom colt and Spartan, homebred for Spartan team.
Right, yeah.
How many you got for them?
He had a couple of them. Spartan, that is a combination of one of my, the owner that owns Change of Control and a few of my horses in my barn. Nice. He's a partner with Keith Krupper so on that particular horse. So they partner up once in a while. But, yeah, they bred him. Had a couple of Sky Kingdoms. We have another one that's in on Thursday after a year off, which is a pretty nice colt too. So yeah, we're trying to turn some of these seconds into wins. We've had a few, and I've had a bunch of them coming off of year layoffs this meet. So let's kind of get ready for the next race. So, but hopefully this horse will. Fire. He's a nice little Sky Kingdom horse too.
Well, and also I want to
going long
how,
on the dirt. On
how
the
about
turf.
That? Well, and how about the filly that debuted? That may be later than not this time. Filly.
Yeah, she's a really. I really love her. She's a very, very classy, mentally, physically beautiful filly, and she was ready to pop anyway. And she always breaks well. She doesn't have speed, and we need to stretch her out. And we always knew that. Just trying to get a piece of it the other day, but she hopped away and just get on that speed favoring track that day. You couldn't give up any ground, and we gave up a bunch of lengths just from the start. So she got a good education on how to eat dirt, but she came out of it great. I really like her. She's a lovely filly. So
that's maybe
we'll turn that around next time.
Well, watch for maybe later. And this race, this was the race of with Bernie Flint, that euphoric that nobody was. She wasn't. I don't know what would have happened anyway if she broke. It wouldn't have mattered. I don't think it would have mattered. That was a big effort
right.
From the Frosted Filly for for Bernie Flynn.
Yes, he was really lovely. Yeah, what a nice win.
And, you know, it's funny. I always note, especially in New York, when we see you know, unusual regional breads, you know, that are participating in New York. This is a New York bread, in fact, that Lakin and Sequel Betty Thomas bred out of a Super Saver mare, Conquest Soprano. This is Euphoric, the winner from Saturday. Michelle, you mentioned some starters, and we talked about change of control, but how about a quick survey beyond the ones we've mentioned? Because you've got you mentioned the Sky Kingdom, and then there's Tap Attack, and there's Cure as well on Saturday.
Yeah. Tap Attack, I own him with my partner, Griffon Farms, and he's making his little comeback. We put him on the shelf for a while. He had some physical issues that we had to deal with, and he's doing really good right now. So and I got stuck putting them both in the same race, which I hate to do that, but I just kind of need to get a race in them. So he's doing fine, and then we've got Coor, and she's been a workmate for Maybe Later. So, but we can't judge her on the other filly's missed start. So I'm hoping for the best for her. I think she'll really enjoy the turf, and she's a homebred as well. And she's a full sister to the horse Bobby Abu Dhabi. So that's exciting to have her in my barn. So yeah, we're looking forward to her start, and let's see, I got Just Might's full sister. She made a start. She's doing fine too. Dynamite Gift. So, we look forward to her, in the future. She's probably not the horse, that Just Might is, early on. But she's done well for herself, and, she's a nice, just turned 4-year-old filly, so every time he does something well, it helps her value as a broodmare. So we're excited about
absolutely.
Yeah.
And you know, on that topic, what is she delivering this year?
I'm sorry. Oh no, Dynamite Gift. We had to put the dam down when she was born. It was terrible. She had four nice babies for us, So, yeah, it was a hard call to make to my partner at 10 o'clock at night that we were going to have to put her down. And so Dynamite Gift was an orphan and raised by a paint mare. And by all of our babies at Gunston Hall in Lexington. So they do a terrific job. And, so Dynamite Gift, I called my partner at 10 o'clock and told him the bad news. And I said, I guess we're out of the broodmare business, Doc, and as soon as they called me back and said, well, she's got a filly, I called them back and said, I guess we're back in the broodmare business. So anyway, that was nice that she had a filly, so because her other three babies were colts. So
nice.
Yeah, so she carries on the little line that we got.
Excellent. Mm-hmm. Well, Michelle, always thrilled for you, and Just Might's win opens, you know, potentially opens some doors, but pressing forward, turf sprinting, and anything else that comes with it. And good luck tomorrow. Hope the Mardi Gras stays on the grass, and I hope people get to enjoy Mardi Gras even under the limited gathering conditions.
It's so sad. There's just no Mardi Gras. Everybody dressed up their houses in town, and people are driving around taking pictures of like they made floats of their houses and stuff, decorations, and it's cold. I guess maybe that would have stopped them from being outside anyway. I don't know.
Exactly.
Yeah. Hopefully next year it'll all go back to normal, and you'll be here to celebrate with us like normal.
Exactly. Exactly.
Awesome.
Well, we're gonna try, and either way, we'll see you in Kentucky for the spring. And Michelle,
I know,
Lovell, everybody.
We missed our breakfast at Lemoo's, right?
I know.
And
I know.
Miss Mardi Gras. Yeah, doggone it. But anyway, this 2021, it'll get better. Yep.
Exactly. Everybody's taking care of business.
Yeah.
Follow Michelle on Twitter, _ Michelle Lovell, with two L's, LOVELL, Michelle Lovell. Well done. Talk soon.
Thanks, Steve. Have a great day.
You too, Michelle Lovell, everybody. And tomorrow she's got change of control in the Mardi Gras. We'll stay right here because Rich Migliore's standing by. And Rich, downstate with the big weekend of action on America's Day at the Races on Fox. And Mig, good morning.
Mig, good morning. I'm just outside of Aqueduct, just pulled up, and I'm enjoying the work. I love doing the shows, but I got to be honest with you, I cannot wait to get home.
You've been down since Friday?
Yeah, I came down Friday. You know, because it was just like a pretty hectic schedule, and I didn't want to take any chances with weather or anything. So I checked in the hotel on Friday and, you know, dug in. And now I left the hotel a little while ago. And like I said, the only thing I'm a little concerned is we got some weather coming into the Hudson Valley. So, I'm on till the end of the show today. So hopefully I won't have any trouble getting home.
No, well, I hope not. It's been, I mean, it's funny. I guess we're going to get eventually some of it, but I talked to my father yesterday and he said, "Oh, you must've gotten," I said, "No, we got nothing." So we're kind of on the watch and just worried about everybody. Rick Hammerly just put up a picture from, you know, where he's staying on Lake Hamilton at Hot Springs. And, it's a whiteout condition there. And you know, in terms of impacting the broadcast, Rich, I don't know what you guys had been. You probably were planning to have the Southwest card under normal scenario today.
Yeah, no, we were. And, you know, then also on Saturday, we were going to, you know, cover the Barbara Fritchie and the General George, which now will be run next Saturday. So hopefully it'll work out that we can cover those as well. But I tell you what, you know, everybody sees the product, you know, we're putting out and everybody in front of the camera, but I can't overstate, you know, just how incredible the crew is and coming up with, you know, a plan B, a plan C, a plan D on the fly. And, you know, all that goes into it, building graphics and editing features and the timing, the rundown, they're sensational. I mean, I'm really impressed and in awe of our crew behind the scenes that make it go.
Well, and you know, today, just to give everybody the lay of the land, and I don't know what you guys ended up settling on, but Aqueduct, Santa Anita course, and in fact, you got the Wishing Well out west today. The Holly Hughes in New York, I mentioned. The Golden Gate runs today. Turf Paradise, Parks is scheduled, and Mahoning Valley and Laurel was scheduled, and. I don't think I've seen anything about Laurel today, so I'm sure you'll scare up a couple of fill in the blank opportunities. Rich, talk about the weekend a little bit, and you know what you were impressed with. You know, Saturday in New York was kind of a quiet race day. Yesterday there was Nikki the Vest that, you know, couldn't have looked better winning that Gander. I thought for a few strides early that Chowda might, and Lobster, I should say, Lobster would have had a chance, but Nikki the Vest just kept going, and I guess they'll have to look at the Gotham. Some thoughts about the weekend?
Yeah, I mean, he was super impressive, and Nikki the Vest is named for a guy at Rayos. I actually have a picture of him in my phone from one night when we were there. So there is an actual Nikki the Vest. and he was super impressive. I mean, he was a beast. Lobster did really well to, you know, finish second. Because when a horse leaves you like that, a lot of horses will cave in. So Lobster showed he's really okay, you know, even though he was well beaten. Because he showed heart. I thought he ran tremendous. I was talking with his owner, Eddie Fazone, in the paddock, because I actually was reporter for that race. And, yeah, he's got Chowda, Lobster, and he's got Half-Brother Cumming, Oyster. So he's got the seafood market cornered. And of course, you know, I was there with Mr. Siaka, and he had to bring up the race is named the Gander, and I rode Lovely Nurse, Gander's mother, for him. And I scratched her on the way to the gate one day. And I said, yeah, I saved her life, and I was rewarded by winning the Empire Classic on her son, Gander. So, you know, but you know, my buddy Gary, he's got to break your chops.
What was he giving you a hard time about?
He trained Lovely Nurse.
Gary right.
did.
Yeah.
Who was the mother of Gander.
Yeah.
I rode her for him, and we're going back 30 years maybe now. And one day she did not warm up well, and I scratched her on the way to the gate. He still brings it up that I scratched Gander's mother on the way to the gate. So my response to Gary now is, yeah, I said I saved her life that day because she wasn't right, and I got rewarded by riding Gander and won a $250,000 race on him.
I love it. I love it. It's funny. Gary has mentioned Lovely Nurse every so often when Gander's name comes up. He'll say, you know, I trained his dam, and I got to pull up her record. I should mention this because the Siaka watch is on. Gary edging toward 1,000 wins.
Wow. Wow, that's a big number.
Yeah,
that's cool. This game is so funny, Steve, because like knowing Gary back when he worked for Alfiore.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's how far back we go. And honestly, he has never changed. He is the same exact guy as he was when I met him when I was 15 years old, and here we are in our 50s.
Well, he's a dozen wins away from 1,000, and. I'm trying to figure out how one of ours can be, win number 1,000. I want to be there with that, be able to hold one of those signs with Gary. It would be fun.
You know, it'd be cool because a few of the milestones I had in my career came for people that were very instrumental in my career and had become more than business associates.
Sure.
They became dear friends. So. It's interesting now because they used to not make as big a deal out of certain things. Now, for a trainer, 1,000 wins is a big number. But for a jockey, like, I couldn't tell you who my 1,000th winner was, and I couldn't tell you who my 2,000th winner was.
That's interesting.
Yeah, they didn't make a deal out of it. It wasn't a thing. When I won my 3,000th, it was a thing, and that was for John Kimmel. And then my 4,000th was for Kieran McLaughlin. So... beyond being people that we had a great business relationship, they were friends. They're, to this day, they're dear friends. So, it kind of actually added a little more meaning to it. So it would be incredible if it happened to be one of your horses to do. I mean, that would be as good as it gets.
Yeah, we got time to plan. I mean, I'll try to maneuver. It'll come. If everything continues to go okay, maybe Saratoga. He'll be zeroing in on 999, and we'll see if we can't get it. Right now, we got the Philly, we got Minute Mouse and Kid and coming off the win and. And the now 3-year old too, that we may wait for turf with Scherzando. So we'll it feels like
in a perfect world, Steve, in a perfect world, it happens in Saratoga and things are a lot more wide open, and we could all go out and celebrate a huge milestone.
Nice. That would be now we're talking.
World. Yeah, well, that was something I was thinking last night because I've been like I leave Aqueduct, I pick up takeout. And go back to the hotel. I don't leave the hotel room, and I prepare for the next day. But there, where I stay in Westbury, there are a few really nice restaurants that I do like to frequent. But because of the pandemic, I pick up takeout on the way, and I stay in the room. It would probably be easier to be in a hotel room away from home if you actually could walk down to a restaurant.
Yeah, exactly.
Have a proper meal. But we're all dealing with it. But I was actually thinking about that last night, and who knows? Maybe by Saratoga, at least we'll have some semblance of normalcy, and that would be a good time.
Well, and as it happens, I had had Pat McKenna on Friday with specifics about where they stand in terms of, you know, people are already. In fact, Tina heard the segment, and she said to me, what are they worrying about? I said, people want to book hotels. People want to know that, you know, that there's a likelihood that, that they can come this summer. And you know, it sure feels like, particularly with the backyard, you know, you got a scenario where, I don't know, 40% capacity, 30% capacity, 50%, who knows? Things are certainly trending in the right, seemingly in the right direction with, you know, right. both infection rate and with inoculations, so vaccinations. Rich, some thoughts about the big three-year-old races. And, you know, one thing that is going to be repeated regularly about what went on at Fairgrounds anyway on Saturday was pretty clear that it didn't hurt to be on the pace, near the pace, you know, in the race flow. Mandaloon with a very square step forward from the LeCompte, and the fillies, Clairière particularly, I thought, was terrific, and Joe Talamo with a phenomenal ride.
Yeah, that was a tremendous ride. I mean, she kind of brushed the gate leaving there and you know, needed some time to find her stride, and he was patient, confident, saved all that ground, let her slide up into the race, you know, using her as little as possible to get to the position he was in. I think her and the runner-up, her name escaped me now, is it True Column? Was
Travel.
Yes, okay, so I think they're very close in ability, and I see this budding rivalry kind of taking shape, and I really hope we get to see them square off several times, because I think they're extremely close in ability. They're both very good. And then it comes down to trips and tactics and, you know, and one thing that always inspired me or captured my imagination, and I was fortunate, you know, to be sinking my teeth into racing, and the rivalry of Firmed and Aladar really, you know, caught my attention. Also, when you'd have Forgo squaring off with Lord Ribot and Foolish Pleasure, and they would meet several times, those, you know, those kind of horses. So, you know, I really hope that we get to see them compete on a regular basis, because I think they'll trade. It'll be Ali Frazier. They'll trade decisions. Hmm. They'll go at each other. You know, it's great for us as fans. Maybe not so much the connections that they, you know, have to face off against a tough competitor every time. But you know, and you think about the pedigree of the carrier with Cavorti. You know, multiple grade one winner. Kieran McLaughlin trained her. She won the test and the Ogden Phipps and, you know, the personal ends. And she was some kind of mare.
Well, I started to reference earlier this morning about a pair of harmonies from Saturday. And, you know, they ran the Rachel Alexandra, and her grandson, essentially, Rachel's Valentina, her son Alejandro, and we'll talk to Steve Asmussen actually next in about 10 minutes, ran okay. Alejandro ended up fourth in his debut. But, you know, to have a Stone Street homebred win the Rachel Alexandra, that was kind of cool. And then there was Little Al winning the race for his dad, the Big Al Memorial. So there were some nice harmonies.
Absolutely. That was very cool. Yeah, no doubt. And, you know, the people at Stone Street and Barbara Banky, and actually Kieran McLaughlin had set it up for me and Ernie Munich, and actually Steve Haskin to go visit Rachel. This was several years ago now. And they just, you know, threw the doors wide open for us. And, I you know, I've got pictures of me holding Rachel, which, you know, it's funny. As long as I rode and I had a, you know, wonderful career and everything, I still get a kick out of having my hands on that kind of horse. Like, you know, I'm still a fan. You know, as I was pulling up to Aqueduct, I was trying to figure out exactly how far I grew up away from Aqueduct. I said, well, just put it in your GPS, the address in Brooklyn. I grew up 9.9 miles away from Aqueduct. So, like, in my mind, I'm still that kid, like, used to, like, crave to get out to Aqueduct to see, you know, Ron Turcotte and Eddie Maple and Georgie Velasquez at Cordero Ride. And, you know, it's funny how I've never shaken off that idea that I'm still that kid that loved the game as opposed to somebody who's actually accomplished in the game.
And you, when you talk about her specifically, I had, I don't know if you remember this, a summer when Hal Wiggins came to Saratoga with some horses. And I haven't told this story in ages, but he had a horse that debuted and was, to me, incredibly impressive. Unfortunately, chipped the knee and in that race, actually. And I want to say that it was the race that Graham Hall broke his maiden. And the horse's name was Perfect Sleeper. And I ended up, this had to have been 99. And I ended up going to Churchill that fall. It was the first time I'd ever been to Churchill. And Hal Wiggins, I went into the paddock and because I wanted to say hello to Hal and ask him, you know, where Perfect Sleeper was. And he said to me, chipped the knee and had surgery. And if we're lucky, we'll get him, you know, he should be ready, you know, for next summer for Saratoga, maybe. And he went on to, you know, he ended up never being the same, really. And it's really sad because I should pull up that. I haven't watched that replay, and I can't remember the last time. But anyway, so I got to know Hal Wiggins a little bit in advance of Rachel. And so when Rachel came along, I got to I can remember Carolyn Connolly and I actually spending time with her. And this was before the Kentucky Oaks, actually, when they had come from Hot Springs to, you know, settle in at back at Churchill. Hal Wiggins and Lon, just among the nicest people in the game. And any occasion to talk about Rachel and Hal Wiggins, certainly
would you ever
a good occasion.
See a Kentucky Oaks winner win easier? Will you ever see what she did in the Mother Goose? I know it was only a three-horse field. She left two grade one winners in her way. She beat Flashing that day something like 22 lengths, and Flashing won two grade ones after that. So she wasn't, you know, racing against nothing. She was making good horses look less than ordinary. She was, I mean, what she did in the Oaks, she was in a gallop and widening every step through the stretch.
Yes.
It was unreal. It was absolutely unreal. And then to come back in 15 days and win the Preakness, I mean, what a campaign. And to take on the Olders and the Woodward, you will never see. Listen, what Swiss Skydiver did last year was phenomenal. We're never going to see another campaign like we saw Rachel Alexander as a three-year-old.
No. Well, whenever this comes up, I always say, the researchers, I'm still waiting to hear from the researchers who are trying to find a three-year-old filly that beat Elders in September. Of their three-year-old year, they've been working on that for a while. That that research.
You might have to go back to a whole other era to even consider that.
Yeah.
I mean, but no, you know, just phenomenal as a racing fan.
Yeah.
You know, and you talk about connections. This game, right? So, you know, I've known Steve since he was a kid because I rode with his brother Cash, a phenomenal rider. He brought up Graham Hall. I used to ride Windcrafty Lady, Graham Hall's mother.
Oh my God!
For Sabine Stable and Bobby Barbera won stakes on her on the inner track. She was fast. One day we ran her a mile and 70 yards, and I was like, "This ain't gonna work." I mean, she was sprint fast, 21:44 kind of fast, and she ran off with me into the first turn, and she was like 8 in front. And when she got in the first turn, it kind of took her off the bridle because it came up kind of quick. And she wound up winning. I mean, she didn't want any part of that mile and 70, but she did it the first time. And then, thankfully, they cut her back in distance because she was not, I mean, I don't know, still don't know how she did it that day.
Well, and as you're talking, I wanted to go back and find this race, July 28th, 1999. And
I was hurt. I wasn't riding.
No, you're out, eh? Actually, no, it wasn't. I'm wrong. It was not. It was not Graham Hall. It was Lac Grand and Sykes Alive. I think was must have been the horse that I remember out of that race. But Pat Day rode Perfect Sleeper and came from well back to get and then galloped out past everybody and then was out until February of that year and ultimately broke the maiden at Fairgrounds. In fact. Yeah, I tracked him the rest of his career, and it's just funny how horses you sort of latch on to a horse. He won 12 times, 69 starts, made 113,000 despite the, but he was a talent.
Yeah, I mean people should think about thoroughbred race horses in the same context you think about human athletes. You know that they're going to have injuries, they're going to have different physical, maladies that they're going to have to overcome. Anybody that's competitive is going to, stress their body to that point. And same thing with horses. And you see how many, world-class human athletes just not quite the same after certain injuries. They just can't quite get back to what they once were. It's very difficult. Part of it's physical and part of it's mental. I remember as a kid, we had a horse named Karistan by Damascus. We all nicknamed him Churchill when he was a two-year-old because we thought we were going to Churchill Downs. He broke his maiden, impressive at Hialeah. He came back and he beat Prince Valiant, who is a very good green tree horse. Actually won the Louisiana Derby after that. But he bucked shins in the race. And buck shins can be very painful. It is very painful for us. And even though he healed up properly and it wasn't, the end of the world, he didn't need surgery or anything. Back then they used to pin fire a lot of horses. He was never the same horse. He just didn't want to go to the place where it hurt. And an athlete, whether it's human or equine, either they have that ability to kind of get past it, run through it, if you will, or they don't. And I don't think he ever won another race after that. And it was a shame because he had an incredible amount of ability, but he went to a place that I don't really want to go there again. Hook and Ladder and Trippy, when they hooked up in the Gulfstream Park Sprint Stakes, they went head and head every step of the way for 7/8 of a mile, went a half and 43-3, I think. And Hook and Ladder outgained Trippy. They ran a huge buyer figure. Neither horse was never quite the same. They had went too deep to the well. Now, they both won races after that, but not if they got in that dogfight. I would ride Hook and Ladder after that. If he got hooked hard, he would almost like tighten up and his ears would pin when he didn't want to go back to that place. And it's a shame that that wasn't like the Breeders' Cup Sprint, because those two put on as crazy a display of speed and heart that day that you'll ever see.
It's amazing how we end up down rabbit holes. Because now I looked up the connection, and yeah, Windcrafty Lady Graham Hall. You're right on that. And the reason Graham Hall was in my mind was because that horse Sykes Alive that came out of that race beat Graham Hall later at Saratoga that summer, and then Graham Hall went on to do what he did in his career, making $1.1 million. And
I was second him in the Naira Mile, or it might have been the Cigar Mile by then.
Well, and Windcrafty Lady herself made 300,000, won 8 times.
Oh, she was a tough little filly. She was tiny, but Steve, she was fast. Like if you squeezed her out of the gate, she'd give you a quarter and 21. I mean, she was fast. I remember one night I rode her at Garden State, and Tony was in front. Tony Black was in front, and Tony would stay off the rail and try to bait you in there, and then
yeah.
And I was riding behind him, and I'm going, do I go there? Nah, I don't think you should go there. And he did this real long look to the inside. He almost looked like a turtle with his head came out, and he had those glasses underneath his goggles. And I was like, nah, just made up my mind. I'm not going in there.
I love it. And I'm looking for, boy, I tell you, what a nice record. Here you are at 14-1 winning the Interborough with her in 93 on New Year's Day.
Yeah, that race was always New Year's Day for years, but not anymore. And it was so cool to win that race, you know, New Year's Day, to start the year like that. I think I won it two or three times, but love the Interborough. It's just so funny. It's good. Like today we had the Holly Hughes, right? And then I've done the research about Holly Hughes and training for Sanford Stud, Huracana, 1916 Kentucky Derby winner George Smith, six American Grand Nationals, one English Grand National. What, you know, an incredible trainer, was with them for 67 years. And so I go to Wikipedia this morning, and it has, you know, most wins by trainers, Michael Hushin, six. Most wins by owner, Barry Schwartz, six. Most wins by jockey, three guys tied. Angel Cordero, Junior Alvarado, Richard McVeary. I won the race four times. It's not a tie. Okay? I don't like getting tied.
That's great. All right, we'll have to make that correction. You can correct that yourself. That's the beauty of...
Not me. I'm technologically challenged. The only thing I could ever do with my hands was cross the rein.
Rich, I'll let you get inside because I know you got to get ready. You got a meeting and the America's Day at the races slate later today. New York starts at 1:20 Eastern, and keep everybody entertained. All day? 4.5 hours.
From 1 to 5:30, I'm on... hopefully there'll be a bathroom break somewhere in there, but Andy's off today, and I'm on the entire show today. So, but you know, when Eric Donovan asked me, "Is that okay?" I was like, "We're not digging ditches; we're talking about horses." So,
listen, you made it through lots of Mondays with Ernie, even if he had to pull out the guitar now and then.
Oh, we had Mahoney Valley. Parks is our big track, Finger Lakes. And a little later on, we'll bring you Sunland Park, some quarter horse action.
Too funny. Rich Migliore, everybody. Thanks, Richie. Thanks. You got it. Rich Migliore, everybody, heading in. Let's take a break. Coming up this hour, Steve Asmussen, Brendan Walsh, Chris Block, Nick Tamaro later to do some handicapping, get some thoughts from Nick about the weekend. Al Stahl closes it out. Full Monday of action. Thanks to Michelle Lovell and Mig to get the morning going. SiriusXM at the races back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on SiriusXM Radio.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only three states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at pabred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Sirius XM Sports.